Looks like 6-7 floors were taken out. And there's more explosions right now. Hold on, people are running.
Hold on just a moment. We got an explosion inside.
The building's exploding right now. You got people running up the street.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on.
We understand that a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. We don't know anything more.
Huge explosion now, raining debris on all of us. We better get out of the way.
And we also have a report now that it was a plane that crashed into the Pentagon, and we have a large fire at the Pentagon. The Pentagon is being evacuated as we speak now.
Jules, this is Ryan. Listen, on an airplane that's been hijacked, and things will go well. I'm looking good. I just want you to know I absolutely love you. I want you to do good. So happy to sign. Same to my parents and everybody. And I just totally love you, and I will see you in Chester.
I think we have a terrorist act of proportions that we cannot begin to imagine at this juncture.
I want you all to know that America today, is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you! I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Hello, America. This is Mike Pence, and welcome to a brand new podcast, American Freedom. I'm coming to you from the national headquarters of Young America's Foundation. Young America's Foundation, for the last 50 years, has been the premier conservative organization educating America's youth on the virtues of freedom and the ideals of the American founding. And it's my great honor to serve as the Ronald Reagan Presidential Scholar for YAF. Many of you may not know that before Ronald Reagan entered public life, he was actually a broadcaster. And after he'd been governor of California, it was Young America's Foundation that sponsored a radio broadcast that Governor Ronald Reagan hosted. And when Scott Walker, the new president of Young America's Foundation, approached me after the election, suggested that I do a podcast that Young America's Foundation would support, I was deeply honored to have the opportunity to continue that tradition. And I look forward to doing so in the weeks and months ahead with all of you. And these are times of great challenge in the life of our nation as we witness the failed leadership of the Biden administration, a crisis on our southern border, a crime wave in our cities, continuing efforts for each of us to preserve our freedom as we work to put the coronavirus pandemic in the past, and of course, the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. I look forward to speaking to all of you about those issues in the days ahead. But for today, for this first installment of American Freedom, we're going to focus on what happened 20 years ago, on September the 11th, 2001. Before we sign off today on this first installment of American Freedom, we're going to talk to young Americans whose families were personally impacted by that day. We'll talk to other young people who have made it their cause to never forget what took place that day and never forget not only those that we lost, the heroes that were forged on that day and on every day since, but have carried the message of never forget to campuses across America. And before we sign off, I'll be joined by the president of the Young America's Foundation, Scott Walker. And I'll share with you my recollections of that day. I was a freshman member of the Congress. I was on Capitol Hill on 9/11/2001. And I'll tell you about those experiences in my firsthand account. Every one of us has a story from that day. Every American above a certain age remembers where they were when they first heard that the towers had been struck. For my part, though, I saw firsthand the beginnings of our national response, and for the last 20 years, I have marveled at the heroes that have stepped forward to defend our nation, to bring us to a place now, 20 years on, without a major terrorist event taking place on American soil. And we'll end our conversation today with a word of profound gratitude to all of those who have served, especially those that paid the last full measure. So welcome to this first edition of American Freedom. I'm Mike Pence, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to American Freedom. This is Mike Pence. When we think of September 11, 2001, we often think of those that were lost. 2,753 at the World Trade Center, 184 at the Pentagon, 40 in a field in Pennsylvania. But as we all know, those were all individual lives, families that were changed forever because of the attack that took place on that day, and because of the heroism that was shown by those who ran in while others ran out. But families changed, and one of those families was the family of Norbert Sierkowski. Norbert Sierkowski was working in the North Tower on September 11, 2001, and as the story goes, he was actually not supposed to be there that day. He was called in to do a last-minute job that morning. And his family believes he was likely on his way out of the building when the first plane hit the North Tower. His daughter, Claudia Sierkowski, is with us today to share with her recollections of her dad and how his loss changed the life of her family. Claudia, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. And I know this weekend that you and your mother and your family will be in New York City at Ground Zero. But can you tell us about your dad? I know that you were born after he left this world, but I'm sure he continues to be just an enormously important influence in your life.
Absolutely. So a little bit of backstory about it is both of my parents were born over in Poland, and they immigrated here, my mom in 88 and my father in 89. And they met, they fell in love, they had a daughter. My older sister was 3.5 when he passed. And they were actually on vacation in Poland. And just a week prior to 9/11, they were wrapping up their vacation. And my mom was looking at the calendar and she's like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. And so she told my father. And the one thing that sticks with me is that he was so excited to have another kid. And my mom, you know, just found out she's pregnant. She was like, oh my God, I'm doing it all over again. And they wrapped up an amazing vacation in Poland with the news of me. My mom figured that she was about 4 weeks along. And when they came back, I believe, either the 8th or the 9th of September. And he went back to work that Monday. He was working over in Jersey. And that night he got a phone call saying that he's going to have to go to the 104th floor of the North Tower to fix a mistake that was made somewhere along the line, either a week or the day before. He was only supposed to be there from 7 in the morning to 9 in the morning before, you know, businesses opened up. And well, we all know that the first plane hit at 8:46 a.m., so he never made it home.
So he was up there fixing a job, a contract wallpaper hanging job. And he was supposed to be done before 9 a.m. And so your family believes he was likely on his way out. But his job was on the 104th floor of the North Tower that day. And the first plane plowed into the building at 8:46 a.m., severing all the stairwells on the 93rd floor. When did your mom first hear about what was happening? And she knew he was there at the building that day.
Right. So one thing, I'm not quite sure when she found out that everything was going on. I know she didn't try calling him until she really knew what was happening, and that was hours after the fact. My grandmother, his mom, called my mom's mom over, because she worked in Manhattan. She called her saying that she needs to go home right away and go to my mom. And my mom would tell us that she had family flying in from Poland to take care of my older sister, to take care of her. over time, my mom kind of just shut out the world. She would not be in a room where the news was playing. Everybody had to turn it off. She wouldn't eat. She wouldn't sleep. She wouldn't do anything. So one day my godmother actually came to her and she's like, come on, let's go do something. You know, let's get you out of the house. This is about a month after 9/11. And my mom looks at the horizon, the skyline of New York, and she sees that the towers have fell. She didn't even know the towers fell until almost a month after the fact. That is how closed off she became. She called him several times and it went straight to voicemail. So that was hours after. She had no idea.
When you think, what has your mom told you about your dad that you've carried with you into your life? I'm someone of my father passed away when I was in my 20s. And sometimes I have to remind myself that my children never met him because we talk about him so often. Are there any memories your mom has shared? These two immigrant kids that came to America were living the American dream.
The one thing that my mom always tells my older sister and I is that if we want to know anything about him, we just look at ourselves. She tells us we're split 50-50 down the middle. She looks just like my mom, but acts exactly like my father did. And I look just like my father, but act like my mom. So she tells me that if I ever want to experience what it was like to be out with him on an adventure is to go out with my sister. She always made it known that we can ask her anything and everything that we want to know, no matter the time, no matter the day. And I have taken that to my full advantage. She's told me countless of stories of how he always was smiling and laughing and bringing positive light to every situation that's going on. And so that's something that I try to do in daily life.
And they both made a decision to come to America.
Yeah. So my mom, she came over in 88 when she was 12. Mm-hmm. And she just told me recently he came over in 89. Mm. And he was 6 or 7 years older than she was. And they met in 1992. And we're together ever since.
You know, in the aftermath of that, the heart of every American went out to families like yours. And talk to us about that, about the community support as your mother was going through what she was going through. Has she ever reflected on the support she received from friends and neighbors and what a comfort that's been?
I think the biggest thing that she always tried to make sure we knew is that we have everybody on our side, you know. Mm. She had family from out of the country flying in, her neighbors, everybody was there for her. Everybody was looking for him. We didn't find any of his remains, so we don't have anything to fall back on. So everybody was just always there for her, and she used that to her advantage. I mean, she needed all the help she can get with having a 3.5-year-old and being pregnant at the same time.
Yeah.
And so she kind of took over that role, and my older sister did too, and they kind of became my rock. And my mom became my older sister's rock, and we kind of just did the same thing.
Claudia Schurkowski is sharing with us memories of her dad, Norbert Schurkowski, who perished on 9/11 in the North Tower that day. You were born after that, but as we prepared to go on the air with this podcast, I could see that this weekend's very difficult for your family, even for you. And tell us about that. About what does this day mean every year to your family, and what will it mean again to be at Ground Zero in New York City as your family will be?
So for me, what this day is it's very heavy, but this day exemplifies how free America is, that we had to be attacked for it to really understand that we are that free. We kind of took advantage of it until September 11th opened our eyes and showed us we shouldn't take advantage and take for granted what we have. We should just accept that and appreciate that, you know, and I feel like that really changed the aspect to a bunch of people, really opened their eyes. But for me, this day is the most confusing day of my life. I am 19 years old, and I'm mourning the loss of somebody that I never met, that I have only seen through photos and videos and heard stories about, but he gave me life. I am here because of him. So it's confusing to me on how I can miss somebody so much without knowing them, and how I can love him so much without even hearing him say my name. It's just that confusing.
But you're an American because of your dad.
Exactly.
And your mom, who came here to live the American dream.
What I like to say is I am the make and model of the American dream.
Oh, I love it. Well, you're an incredibly inspiring young woman.
Thank you.
And I know your mom is proud of you, and my heart tells me your dad is proud of you too. So we will all of us be thinking of your family this weekend. And Claudia Schakowsky, thank you so much for sharing memories of your father. Thank you for sharing your heart today, and God bless him and God bless your family.
Thank you so much.
We'll never forget. Welcome back to American Freedom. This is Mike Pence. We think of all those that were lost on September the 11th in New York, at the Pentagon, and in a field in Pennsylvania. We also think of those who fell that day, who rushed in to save lives. But I can't help but come to this day every year and think of all the heroes that have stepped forward every day since for the last 20 years. It's extraordinary to think nearly 6 million Americans have stepped forward, young men and women, to put on the uniform of the United States and defend our nation. And we're privileged today to be joined by the daughter of one of those heroes. Brandi Anderson is with us. Her father was Petty Officer Second Class Michael Anderson. He had enlisted in the Navy after high school and served his country separated from the military before 9/11. But after September 11th happened, Michael Anderson reenlisted as a Navy CB. And he lost his life on the 2nd of May, 2004, from a mortar attack on his camp in Ramadi, Iraq. His daughter, Brandi Anderson, was 7 years old at the time, and she's with us today. Brandi, thank you for joining us for American Freedom.
Thank you for having me and letting me share my dad's story.
It is extraordinary to think of the heroes that step forward to take the fight to our enemies in the aftermath of September 11th. And you were a little girl when you lost your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You have memories of that. But I expect you also have a great deal of pride, and I hope you feel the gratitude of the nation for your dad's service and sacrifice.
I was definitely a daddy's little girl. My dad was incredible. He had enlisted in the U.S. Navy shortly after high school, and after our nation was attacked, he reenlisted because he saw the future of our beloved nation and was worried what that would mean. He was a very apolitical man, didn't watch Fox News or CNN or MSNBC at all. He was watching Winnie the Pooh in the bedroom with me and Scooby-Doo. But he saw the attack on our nation and knew that what he had to do.
And he had already served.
Yes.
He'd already worn the uniform.
Yes. He was stationed on the USS Forrestal during the 90s.
But so he went back in after 9/11. He was deployed to Iraq when he fell. Tell us about how long he had been deployed before that. How long had your dad been gone? When was the last time you saw him?
So he had gotten the call in December of 2003 that they were going to be sending them over. He had to get his affairs in order, and then a few weeks later, he was shipped to Gulfport, Mississippi to do his basic training. And he left for Kuwait April 1st, 2004. A few weeks later, on April 30th, a VIED killed two of the members in his battalion, Jason Dwelly and Dickerson. My dad was in the Humvee right before them. My dad, although born in Daytona, spent a lot of time in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, which is a farm town, so he's a farm boy. So I'm sure seeing the catastrophic event would have changed him dramatically, and I don't know how he would have reacted had he come home. 2 days later, the admiral gathered all the men in the battalion to inspect the damages that had occurred on the vehicle and to discuss what had happened. At that time, 4 mortars were launched onto his camp, killing him and 4 others and wounding 35 more. Mm. We were informed on May 3rd, 2004. I was at home watching TV, and we had a screened-in patio. I saw a man in a white suit and a woman come in, and I went and got my mom, and my mom knew immediately as soon as she walked in. She had me go into my room, and of course I was listening into the door and trying to hear what would happen. And I remember thinking, this can't be happening. My dad said he would be back in time for my birthday in October. It's still hard to comprehend that he's gone. We did everything together, from basketball, baseball, football, to playing Pretty Princess, where he would put the tiny rings on his hand just to play with me. He was incredible. The anniversary of his death and 9/11 always hit my family very hard, as we remember the sacrifices all Americans have made during that time and have made since.
So both of those dates are dates that impact your family every year.
Very much so.
And we understand the date that your father fell. But I'm very moved that you understand that September 11th is your family's as well.
Thank you.
That your father, we will never forget or fail to honor his service or sacrifices. It was forged on that day, that he made that clear to your family, that's why he went back in. That's why he went into harm's way for us. And what does it mean to you today to come to the 20th anniversary of September 11th and know that there's been no major terrorist attack on American soil in those 20 years, and that your father played a role in that?
It's been, the word that just keeps going in my head is overwhelming. There's a lot of emotions all at play, and I'm grateful for all the service and all the sacrifices all the men and women, the 6 million, as you mentioned earlier, have made to protect our freedoms and to protect us and to ensure that our nation had no attack like that again on our soil. So I'm extremely grateful for all those who have served and helped protect us.
But your dad is an American hero.
Thank you.
He stepped forward, volunteered to serve again to defend our nation. And I hope you feel again, as we mark this day, this anniversary, that this country will never fail to honor or be grateful to you, to your family, for the heroic example of Petty Officer Second Class Michael Anderson.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's because of organizations like YAF and Freedom Alliance that really help keep my dad's memory alive and honor his sacrifice and the many other Gold Star students and families who've lost someone in the war.
Well, Brandy, I know this is very difficult, and I thank you for making time to be on American Freedom today on behalf of everybody here at Young America's Foundation. God bless you. God bless your family, and God bless Petty Officer Second Class Michael Anderson. We will never forget.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Freedom. This is Mike Pence. Our thanks again to Claudia Schakowsky and Brandi Anderson for sharing the deeply moving story of their loved ones who were impacted on September 11th and served with great heroism in the days that followed. But now we're turning our attention to some young people. As I said, I'm coming to you from the national headquarters of Young Americans Foundation and the 9/11 Never Forget Project of Young Americans Foundation has been ensuring that we remember the 2,977 Americans lost on that fateful day 20 years ago. And two bright young people have been involved in the Never Forget movement are with us today. Grant Wolf, a graduate of SMU, is with us today. And Elisa Gianelli at Texas Christian University. Both of them have been involved in starting YAF chapters on their campuses. And welcome to you both. Thank you for coming on American Freedom.
Thank you for having us.
Grant, talk to me about your experience at Southern Methodist University. YAF made a decision to create memorials on campuses around the country. Tell me why you were doing that.
I remember very viscerally as a five-year-old watching the towers come down from my living room. Mm-hmm. And my family never shied away from telling us important things about our country and about the privilege that we have to live here. And I think it was impressed on me very early, the cost that we experienced that day, the reason why we were attacked that day. And as I think about, I was right on the cusp of, like we've mentioned earlier, that there were young people who were not born or don't remember the consequences of that day because they weren't there. I think it highlighted the importance to me of needing to help my fellow students remember.
Oh, well done. But you ran into difficulty on campus.
We were told that the university made a new policy that they were not going to allow any historical commemorations or political statements in this public area to avoid any harassing or harmful messages.
But you didn't accept that outcome, and we're going to come back to you for the rest of the story. Elisa Gianelli is with us as well. She is at Texas Christian University, but you've been involved in YAF since high school. But you approached your school about displaying 2,977 American flags on campus grounds. Tell us, why is this important to you?
Sure. So as Grant was saying, my peers and classmates, we were the first that weren't born for 9/11. We did not experience it. It was all new to us. And I realized going into a public high school that it wasn't being taught. I grew up in a home where we talked about 9/11 and we honored all the fallen victims and those affected, but going into a public high school, it was interesting to see that it wasn't being taught. So being the first of our generation to not be alive for 9/11, we realized the importance to never forget, and that's why we put together the project.
And you, along with the rest of our listeners, just heard the compelling story of Claudia Schakowsky and her dad. And one of those flags is for her dad.
Yes.
And you understood that because you were raised in a family that raised you with an understanding of how our nation came under attack.
Absolutely.
And that we were attacked because of who we are, because of our freedom. And so I really commend you.
Thank you.
Well done. You found a way. And young Grant Wolf also found a way with a little bit of help from a governor.
We did. Governor Greg Abbott weighed in on our behalf. Senator Ted Cruz as well. And Franklin Graham took up our cause. Young America's Foundation helped us break the story to the national media, and along with negotiating with the chief legal counsel of the university and some of the other administration, we were able to get them to reverse their decision with public pressure and display our flags to remember those we lost on that day.
Well, my congratulations to you and my gratitude to those three friends, especially Governor Abbott and Senator Cruz.
Absolutely.
That stepped in and made a real difference. Well, tell me, do you know what these tributes mean to these families?
I think, Mr. Vice President, you were highlighting earlier, we were attacked because of who we say we are as Americans, that we believe in the dignity of every human individual. And, you know, the terrorists who attacked us that day don't believe that. And so I think sometimes it's interesting that the comic book writers know it better than the politicians. It's not just about beating the terrorists. It's about whether or not they're right about us as a country. and whether we are who we say we are. And so I think today, as there are questions in our national consciousness about, is America truly morally good? Do we have the moral authority to stand up against evil? It's all the more important on 9/11 to remember those we lost, because they were the cost of standing for freedom. And so it's important to educate our young people that we don't suffer failures of leadership that invite weakness in the future, and that we protect our civilization for generations to come.
Grant and Elise said very eloquent words, very moving, and I'm inspired by your example and by your leadership. And I'm truly grateful to Young America's Foundation for the 9/11 Never Forget Project. And with the family members that we just spoke to, I know what a comfort it is to them that we will never forget, and we'll never fail to understand why our enemies came, and while they still loom in the shadows. It's because of our freedom, it's because of our ideals, and it's because, as we proved every day in the last 20 years, this is a great nation with great people, and I can tell these two young people are among them. So thank you very much. Thanks for your example, and thanks for joining us for American Freedom.
Thank you,
sir.
Welcome back to American Freedom. This is Mike Pence. 20 years ago, America fell under attack. 19 radical Islamic terrorists seized control of 4 commercial airlines to strike the centers of our economy, our military, our national government. They struck the World Trade Center at 8:46 in the morning. Hijackers hit the North Tower. Then 17 minutes later, as the world watched, another aircraft struck the South Tower. At 9:28, a third group of terrorists hijacked Flight 93 in the skies above Pennsylvania and redirected the plane toward Washington, D.C., only to be stopped by an extraordinary group of Americans who rushed forward to seize control of the airplane. And at the Pentagon, 9:37, terrorists struck our great citadel of American strength. The attacks on 9/11 shattered the peace of a quiet September morning here in Washington, D.C., claimed the lives of 2,977 men, women, and children. And in the 20 years since, we've seen Americans step forward, put on the uniform, and pay the last full measure of devotion to defend our nation. We mark this moment with sadness. We pray the Lord is close to the brokenhearted, as the Bible tells us. But we also mark it with a recognition that we've gone 20 years without another major terrorist event on American soil. And that day of tragedy has given way to a defense of freedom that should inspire every American, recent headlines notwithstanding. I'm joined in the studio here at the national headquarters of Young America's Foundation by a great friend and a great American leader, Governor Scott Walker, who also has memories of that day, of September the 11th. You were in Wisconsin. You were raising a young family. Tell us about that day.
Yeah, in some ways, it seems like it was just yesterday. I know for all of us, particularly had kids, my kids, Matt and Alex, were 6 and 7 at the time. Tonette, my wife, had gone into work early that morning. She called me while the kids were having breakfast and said, turn on the TV, but don't do it in the kitchen. I don't want the kids to see this. And I remember just kind of sitting there in awe, but like a lot of folks early on at that time, still didn't know exactly how significant it was.
It's extraordinary to think of it. And my kids were young too. I was actually a freshman in Congress in 2001. And I can remember it like it was yesterday. It's an extraordinary day. And it really underscores how important the work Young America's Foundation has done with Project 9/11 Never Forget. I really want to commend your team, these great young people we just heard from, for making sure that we remember those that were lost and we remember why we were attacked. It was for our freedom.
Well, and the connection between the two, because I remember after we drove, amazingly, still to this day, I can't believe it, but after watching all that initially, took the kids to school, got in a carpool. I was in the state legislature, and we were driving over to the state capitol, and about the point where the Delafield exit is at, we had the radio on trying to figure out what was going on and said that the tower had come down. And I was driving the carpool today, and I almost drove off the road because we looked at each other like, that can't be. you know, we thought, oh, they must have mistook what actually happened. Some pieces must have come off of it. They can't even fathom this idea that kind of damage would occur. And was just literally in shock. And I worried for days after that my kids, I know your kids are about the same age, and I know Audrey in particular, I remember you told me, said something remarkable you should share with us. But I remember our kids, I was so worried that their only image would be the towers coming down, which we should never forget. But I also remember that Friday. Remember 9/11 in 2001 was a Tuesday. That Friday, President Bush invited all of us to go out on our porches and light a candle that night. Mm. And Tonette had dropped the kids off at school that day, and she told some of our friends whose kids were in class with ours to come by the house, because we all didn't really know what to do. It was just such a shock. And we opened the door a little before 7 that night, and our front yard was full. There were families from all over the neighborhood. Nobody knew what to do. My dad was still with us. He was a pastor. And so we went inside and cut up a whole bunch of candles into tiny pieces so that every kid and every family member would have one. We lit the candles. My dad prayed. We sang God Bless America and held hands around the candle lights. And I thank God to this day that we did that, because my kids not only remember the towers going down and what happened and who did that and why they did that, but they also remember the resilience of Americans and people who loved America and our freedom all around the world, who said, "United We Stand" is more than just a slogan. We're not going to take this. We're going to stand up and do what's right. And thank God for the men and women like Brandy's dad, who stood up and defended our country and kept us safe for the last 20 years.
That's a great story. And it puts me to mind of that day in Washington, D.C. I was on Capitol Hill. I was attending a few breakfasts. I heard there'd been an accident was being reported in New York City. And by the time I got back to my office, people were talking about terrorism and a terrorist attack. And that's when I learned that a second airplane had struck the second tower. But I was standing in my office just across from the Capitol when my assistant dropped the telephone and yelled, "The Pentagon's been hit." And we immediately saw on the television screens the smoke rising from the Pentagon just across the river from Capitol Hill. I thought it was important that we exit the building. But I gathered my staff for a very quick prayer. I promised them it'd be very brief. But we prayed for the families in New York. We prayed for the families at the Pentagon. And then we went down the stairs and out of the building. But that sight, Scott, as I walked across in the direction of the Capitol, looking to my left to the south, half of the sky was a clear blue sky, September day, and the other half was filled with columns of billowing black and brown smoke rising out of the Pentagon. I would make my way in the hour that followed to the Capitol Hill police chief's office, where some of the congressional leadership in both parties were gathered. And I was there when the chief of police put the phone down and said, "There's an aircraft inbound to the Capitol, and it's 12 minutes out." And I remember the silence that descended on that office. It was the chief of police's office. And Republican and Democrat leadership were all there, virtually everybody except the Speaker of the House, a Republican at the time. But in that moment, people all of a sudden started to roll their sleeves up, throw their jackets over chairs, sit down, start to map out how we were going to marshal a national response. And as a freshman, I stood to the side. I watched as this history unfolded, 10 minutes, 11 minutes, 12 minutes, then 13, 14, 15, never knowing if the Capitol dome that we could see out the window would be lost to history in the minutes ahead. And it was shortly thereafter that we learned that an aircraft had gone down in Pennsylvania. But after all the activity of the morning, I had the opportunity to slip away to where my young family was in the house we were renting in Northern Virginia. My kids were 6, 7, and 8. We gathered around the kitchen table to have a conversation with the kids, to they'd heard about it. They were at an elementary school where literally the principal had come on and announced that there were explosions in Washington, D.C. Our kids were deeply frightened, and we spoke to them, we prayed with them, and then I was heading back to Capitol Hill for what I knew would be meetings late into the evening and virtually around the clock in the days that followed. But I was walking out of the kitchen, and my youngest, Audrey, said, "Dad, I have a question." She was six. I said, "Audrey, I have to go. I have to get back to work." And she said, "No, Daddy, I have a question." And I said, "I really have to go." And then she stomped her feet and she said, "I have a question." And I turned around, maybe impatiently, and said, "What?" And she said, "If we have to make a war, do you have to go?" And I can't recount that moment without emotion. I literally dropped to my knee, threw my arms around that little girl, because I suddenly knew what she was thinking. It was all she was thinking. And I just hugged her and I said, "Daddy's too old." But I'm reminded profoundly again today, hearing from the daughter of Petty Officer Second Class Michael Anderson, there hasn't been a day gone by since that day that I haven't thought about all the dads that answered that differently. All the sons and daughters who stepped forward, not because they were required to go, because they could go, so they did go. And I've been humbled by it ever since. And that's what today means so much to me for. It's that it isn't that radical Islamic terrorists marshaled an attack, struck at the heart of our greatest city, struck at the heart of our nation's capital. But it was the way Americans responded. It was the way that Todd Beamer and the heroes of Flight 93 fought back at the cost of their own lives. And I will always believe likely saved countless lives in our nation's capital. And maybe that symbol of freedom that is the capital itself. But as the day went on, I'm reminded as I hear about your family's story in Pastor Walker's front yard, that we gathered for a press conference on the steps of the Capitol, Republicans and Democrats alike. Although I will tell you, on that day and in the weeks and months that followed, there were no Republicans in Washington, D.C. There were no Democrats in Washington, D.C. There was just Americans. Everybody rolled their sleeves up and did what needed to be done. We gave our president the authority to take the fight to our enemy. We gave our military the resources to win that fight. We launched the Department of Homeland Security. We reformed systems so that we'd be protected in the future. But we gathered on the steps of the Capitol building. And at the end of the press conference, someone started singing. And people have asked me over the years if it was planned, if we decided. To this day, I don't know who started the song. But they started singing God Bless America. And I joined in, straight from my heart. Not so much as a song, but as a prayer. Just like the people in your neighborhood did. And I'll never forget, it would be weeks later that a farmer friend of mine in Winchester, Indiana, told me. He and his wife were far from home on September 11th. And they raced home listening to all the reports on the radio because their young children were back at the farmhouse. And by the time they got home in the afternoon, their daughter came running out of the front door of the house, down the porch, and said, "Everything's okay," because we saw Congressman Pence on television and he was singing. You know, I truly believe from the front yard there in Wisconsin, to the moments in our nation's capital, to the heroes that step forward every day since, this country should be proud of how we've responded 20 years on. I know the headlines of the last 4 months of broken hearts across the country. The disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan dishonored the service and sacrifice of all who took the fight to our enemy there and brought justice to those who attacked our country. But it in no way diminishes what our servicemen and women have accomplished over those long years, the way they responded to the way our nation was attacked. Families changed forever. And they did it selflessly from their hearts because they love America. So to all of you who've joined us for this first podcast, I hope it's been a blessing to you. It has been to me. My prayer is for all of those for whom this anniversary is not a memory, it's personal. And we'll be remembering all of them in our prayers with that hope that they know, as the Bible says, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. But I also hope that we as a nation, also to borrow a phrase from the old book, that we grieve, we mourn with those who mourn, but we do not grieve like those who have no hope, because our faith gives us hope and heroes give us hope. And the heroism that's been demonstrated that's brought us to this day, marking 20 years on without another major terrorist attack on American soil, is a triumph of freedom. It's a triumph of the American spirit. And by the greatness of our people and the grace of God, we'll prevail against all that's against us in the days ahead. Well, Governor Walker, thank you so much. Thank you for Young America's Foundation and the work that you personally have led on Project 9/11 to never forget. Thank you for your voice and your example, and thank you for giving us this opportunity to start a new tradition with American Freedom and Young America's Foundation as a podcast across this country.
God bless you. Well done.
This is Mike Pence on American Freedom. See you next time.